So our next presenter is Roger Weens, who's from Purdue, and he's been involved in Mars exploration and instrumentation. And his talk is called, Does Christianity Require Belief in the Supernatural? Let's welcome Roger.
Yeah, thank you, Arnold, and it's a pleasure to be here. I almost want to apologize. This is the first time I've actually taken a foray out of Mars and other places, and am trying to give a talk on something that's more general to Christianity. I'm a new professor, not really young, but new, at Purdue, and I'm trying to start a local student chapter at Purdue, and this is maybe a start of a talk that I would give there as well. So if you want to hear more about Mars, this is the book that I wrote some time ago about how I how God got me involved and got into Mars exploration. Just earlier this week, we announced that we found some reduction spots in some sedimentary rocks on Mars. If you study the early rock record of Earth, you might know what that potentially means, especially since there is what we looked like an organic signature with that. But I'm more to the topic at hand here. And actually, when I give this at Purdue, I will very likely use a different title. I thought I'd try a provocative title on this crowd, but we're actually going to talk more about the God of the Gaps concept. And I really like the progression from Dr. Kaieda's talk, because I think that helps us set us up for some of this too. I'm going to be speaking maybe in a little bit more general language. There's different levels on which we can talk about these things. So this concept, there's a concept that we have that's called the God of the Gaps. And basically, religious people tend to attribute miracles to God, but there's a converse as well that many people assume that God is not active in ordinary life, and I think that this you would almost call it a dilemma in our in the American church today is part of the reason that we have the anti-science bias in a lot of churches. And it's because people see the need to have a gap in scientific knowledge in order to be an apologetic for God. And I don't think we need that. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that, and then also about what do we do with this God of the Gaps idea? Can we do away with it, or are we stuck with it? Is there a dichotomy in our thinking, or is there not? Now, if we look at scripture, there are scriptures that talk about God working through all things, basically holding the universe together. And I think I'm going to come back to this later, but I think it's a much healthier view for us as Christians. Colossians 1:16 sets up the stage for 1:17, so in 1:16 it says, "For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him." And then it goes on to say, "And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together." And so there's this in other scriptures can be seen as sort of in contrast to this idea that God just set the universe up and we've got some natural laws, but then every once in a while God comes in and zaps things, and that's how we know there's a God. Some of this got set up in the Enlightenment time, and so we can go back to the time of Newton, Halley, and Kepler. Newton himself talked about the God tweaking things because the rules and laws that he could see didn't have the planets and things working perfectly. And so there was this thought that God came in and was needed to make the little changes relative to the things that were understood. And so these were gaps in our knowledge, and some of these gaps were closed a century or two later. Some of the planets' orbits became better understood. But Mercury kind of resisted this tendency, and Mercury's orbit was not completely explained until Einstein's general relativity. In fact, in the 1919 eclipse, the position of Mercury was very precisely plotted, and people started to realize that general relativity had to be true, and it also explained Mercury's orbit. But so these gaps closed, and as more and more gaps in our knowledge were closed, people saw less and less need for God, at least if this is their only apologetic, if this is their only reason for arguing for God. And in fact, this started very early, even at the time of Napoleon in the early 1800s, Laplace came to Napoleon with this new work and was explaining it. Napoleon was surprised that he didn't mention God. And Laplace says in his French, of course, "I have no need of this hypothesis." So, and we've gone from there. So in our popular sort of way of thinking about it, we can see the universe as a puzzle. We've put a lot of pieces together in the puzzle thanks to the knowledge that God has given us, but there are these pieces that are missing, and those missing pieces seem to point many people to God. But what happens if we actually fill in those missing pieces? Are gaps the main argument for God? And so if we find this last piece in the puzzle, does God go away? And that's what a lot of people are fearful of, whether stated or unstated. And that leads people to be threatened by scientific advances or trying to fill in the pieces of that puzzle. And it was interesting that in the 1970s that, who's the author of this? I guess it's Harris, came out with this cartoon. And it's so telling because it was, I think, coming at a time when society was catching up with a lot of this, at least in America, and starting to realize that, well, there is this really big dichotomy between the scientific method and the way many people think, especially those of us who are of a Christian persuasion. So how do we deal with this? So there's this whole concept of the God of the gaps. So here is how maybe we see this God of the gaps. Well, actually, I guess I'm not going to talk about that. That's maybe more the materialism that's invaded America. But anyway, I found that on the internet and I couldn't help not showing that. But various gaps have been closed over time, and so just as a reminder, here's maybe a little partial list of some of them. So the Earth's rotation, causes day-night cycles. This was a big controversy for many years. There's cathedrals in Europe trying to show the gospel truth of the fact that the Earth goes around the sun. That the sun goes around the Earth in some of these cathedrals, Then we had Sir Edmund Halley, who helped us out with this idea that comets are icy bodies in the solar system, not spiritual omens. Rain is caused by water cycle on Earth, not by God pouring water through a window in the heavens. That description physically is in the Bible, but at least if you have the right translations. Eclipses are caused by the moon passing in front of the sun. Lightning is caused by charge buildup in clouds. Earthquakes are usually caused by the movement of tectonic plates. Illnesses are usually caused by viruses or bacteria. And we can even go down to genetic mutations lead to different species. So this last one has really been an issue for many people. They've wrestled with it a lot. Maybe many people here are still wrestling with that. And the idea of human origins is one of these hardest fought gaps in America today. It's still going on. And it seems to threaten Christians on many levels. The distinctiveness of humans versus the animal kingdom. I think in 21st century secular America, we don't see much distinction between humans and animals. But certainly in the Bible, there is. Humans are created in God's image. But if humans are the product of evolution, you know, what about eternal life as well? So there's many different aspects in which this gets debated or questioned. Let's walk down a little path and talk about maybe in the direction of scientism, this idea that science can and the scientific method should be tried for everything. So assuming that science is correct and we can eliminate a lot of these gaps, then what? Well, okay, so the universe is a result of naturalistic processes. And we can live with that, perhaps, this universe can still be directed every nanosecond by God, according to theistic naturalists. And if God is in the quantum probabilities, as we just perhaps alluded to in the last talk, that could be the way things work. Perhaps God works through naturalistic processes to direct all aspects of our lives. But what do we do? Okay, so there's nature, but what do you do about the works in the Bible, the things that are called miracles? And we can think about these. So not all of the miracles of the Bible clearly go against the laws of nature. Many miracles are miracles of timing or possibly of very unusual things. Sudden weather changes, sudden things happening with insects or whatever. What are some examples of these things in the Bible that you can think of that are not necessarily going against the laws of nature that as we know them? I want somebody to tell me. 10 plagues in Egypt. The Nile turned red. Yeah, it could be a natural. Parting of the Red Sea. Yeah. Water to wine. That's a confusing one. Yeah. Okay, but I would say maybe there's another category that we don't understand on an unusual thing within our physical laws that we know now. I would say maybe the resurrection is on that par. We don't understand how that works within our, we don't know about life after death in the physical universe that we can speak of today. And so there's that. There's maybe others like the virgin birth as well. Maybe you have some other ideas about the resurrection, but I don't understand it by current physical processes. But let's go to the definition of supernatural. I mean, it's something that we should have probably had at the beginning of this talk. And it's something that can be attributed to some force that's beyond the scientific understanding or the laws of nature. There's almost two parts of that definition there because there's this word or. Let's take the first part of that and say beyond scientific understanding. But this is a changeable definition. So yesterday morning, I woke up in Pasadena, California. It was on a pediment or alluvial fan of the San Gabriel Mountains. And this morning I woke up not that far from the Potomac in Washington, D.C. 200 years ago, that would have been an absolute miracle, right? There's other things that happen current days. I work on a project that involves a lot of Europeans, and for the last 20 years, I have spoken almost every workday with somebody in Europe. That's something that 200 years ago would have also been an absolute miracle. The little tin can telephones just didn't go that far. So we can think about a lot of things, and so we could project and say maybe 100 years from now or 200 years from now, there's going to be a lot of things that we would say are supernatural now that would not be supernatural in the ideas of people 200 years from now. So maybe even things that we don't understand now, whether it's the resurrection or a virgin birth or something like that, might possibly be understood. But where does that leave us? Okay, we've talked about that already. So Can we have an understanding of a God who does all things through naturalistic processes? Is that what we want? Is that going to help us? So if God is beyond time, we can think about God existing in another dimension. If you're outside of time, it may be very easy to step into our universe and change things and get the desired outcome that he wants. There's many different ways to look at this. If we were to throw out the idea of human freedom, which is certainly a paradox for us, but just, you know, there is, one can think of God almost as, one can give an analogy of a movie director that can take this movie strip, when it used to be a physical thing, and go in and edit that and change, you know, that actor said, it's not this, but all of a sudden you take out that little clip and then it is this because you've taken out the word not. You can think of these kinds of things happening. That's a crazy and perhaps very graphic way of trying to think of how God could do something if it were not for the idea of human freedom, which is this, like I said, which is a total paradox. One can try to make these kind of imaginations with our puny brains, but I'm going to move on from that. But if everything is naturalistic, have we removed the gaps? We actually haven't, because we still have the physical laws, the laws of the universe, and nobody knows how they came about. We can talk a little bit about a multiverse, one in which there are different universes in which different laws exist. But we still wouldn't know how those would have been created as well. So we don't come up with a completely holistic picture of the universe through completely naturalistic thoughts or ideas. So, I mean, this is the very same thing as the failing of scientism. Scientism cannot explain everything as well. So we're left with a gap. We end up with a gap, whether we want one or not. So should we embrace this God of the gaps mentality? I would say not in terms of defending the gaps against atheism, because God doesn't need any such defense. I personally don't think that our apologetic should be based on a gap in knowledge. Blind defense of gaps is often an anti-scientific position. God gave us the ability to do science, to learn about his universe. And let's not spurn that gift. Let's try to uncover what is not yet known. But there's the other idea that a gap in our knowledge doesn't really prove God. A gap in our knowledge may prove our less than perfect intelligence. We are not omniscient. But you can even start to think, so dumb people might have more gaps in their knowledge. So you can start to think that way too. So maybe we're just dumb. And that doesn't prove that there is a God or is not. So this is really not an apologetic, I would say. A better alternative to thinking about this is that there are many scripture passages that talk about God as omnipresent and his sovereign activity upholds the universe. We just read one at the beginning of this. But even Jesus' words and his analogy is really good. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? And not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father, but even the hairs of your head are all numbered. And so God is so omniscient, according to Jesus, according to the God of the Bible, that we have trouble comprehending that. But we do have a God that can understand the position of every atom in every stellar system in this universe, which is a very large exponential number. So I think it goes beyond our understanding. But if we can focus on God's constant sovereignty rather than his occasional intervention, I think that is more biblical and more healthy. And I'm going to stop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the talk. I'm going to ask you a question more about your background, which is Mars exploration, as I understand. So what do you think about SpaceX's mission of going to Mars and exploring Mars? And is that something that you're looking forward to for the purposes of your research and your field? Thank you.
Let's see, I'm not sure if I quite heard all of the last of that, but the first part was, what is my position on NASA's promotion of exploration and, for example, looking for life on Mars?
SpaceX in particular.
SpaceX, yeah. I love SpaceX. I think that's really fun, and it's inspiring so many people. So we'll just have to see what they see, what they do. I think there's a lot of capability with SpaceX, and they've already revolutionized things. But we'll see where they get. I'm excited.
Hi. So I'm just wondering. So there are still sorts of reports today, even with like miracles, like people who are supposedly psychics, or like communicating with the dead, or even like healings in a lot of charismatic traditions. I'm just wondering, like, given the frequency, doesn't that suggest that miracles still can happen today? Or is that, does that solely go against what you said about natural law?
Yeah, so do miracles happen today? And I think it's a travesty that many Christians, or a number of Christians anyway, don't believe in miracles. And, you know, that they think miracles stopped with the Bible. But I certainly believe that miracles happen today. And I think there are details in the universe that we don't understand with our current scientific knowledge. And what I tried to do is point to that by saying that our scientific knowledge has, you know, grown so much in the last 200 years. What's it going to be like 200 years from now? Or, you know, how finite are we really? We're probably very, very finite in our current understanding of the entire universe, including the spiritual world. So, yeah.
The gaps in our knowledge could be partly due to our ignorance. I wonder if another reason is because our faith is meant to have a mysterious aspect to it, which prompts us to depend on God.
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. Has God allowed us to understand many things about our universe, but left some things, you know, just currently totally unknowable by us? And that's certainly possible. We're very grateful for the scientific method and the fact that it has worked to allow us this knowledge about God's universe. And in fact, I think that, we can point to the history of science and say that people believing that God has allowed us to learn about his universe was one of the things that propelled the Enlightenment. But there may be a limit to that. I don't know. We don't know that for sure.
Two of the interesting miracle stories in the Old Testament are floating axe heads and long days. It would seem to me that perhaps the solution also is that the monkey is as much on the backs of the theologians as it is on the scientists. And we've got to be careful about wooden literalist interpretations of the text as if they're sacrosanct and it's the scientists who have to answer all the questions. Would you care to comment?
Oh, that's a tough one. Yeah. Do we believe in the inspired inspiration of the Bible, and is the Bible correct in all aspects? And what does that mean? Because a few chapters from this other place, we have a circle that is subscribed by 3 times the diameter. Does that mean that pi is 3.0? I don't think so. And so how? Yeah, we have to be a little careful exactly how we interpret certain things in the Bible, and I think we all know that.
Oh, hello, I enjoyed your talk very much. I think it's very good. I agree with all of it, but my comment, which you admitted was not a very good title. You were testing it out, and I don't like the title because it implies that supernatural equals God of the gaps, and that's really not true. And then part of that is, which you actually was inconsistent with your talk. The whole way through your talk, you were speaking how God works through nature as well as through things we can't explain yet. And clearly you believe in the resurrection of Christ and that sort of thing. And we didn't really define the laws of nature. When we speak of the laws of nature, we're sort of assuming that we have enough scientific understanding that can fully explain what the laws of nature are, and we really don't, because I would suggest something like, does Christianity require us to believe in things that we currently cannot understand as being acts of God, but also that God, that we can't always separate natural, in other words, if we could someday explain how the resurrection happened through quantum mechanics or natural things and all that stuff, would it mean that we had less faith that God actually did the resurrection of Christ? And I don't think so. I mean, it's just, we have this, that's more of a comment, but there needs to be a better name.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I put a very provocative title, and I actually talked, more about the God of the Gaps for sure. Yeah, and so I'll apologize to you for that. Yeah.
Well, let's thank Roger once again.